Initiate Cowrat Podcast.
I don't know, since you've researched a little history, do you want to start? I don't know.
Well, because that actually doesn't have anything to do with my position on the subject.
Right.
Oh, we're talking about tipping, by the way, like waitresses and that kind of thing. I personally have a knee-jerk reaction to it because I feel manipulated
yes.
by the employers. And I think that's lame. And the history of it doesn't really prove out much better than that. Some of it ties back to the Civil War era as far as why they started doing it. But actually, I guess some people started doing it because they did it over in Europe. And so they thought it was kind of a upper society thing to do to help the peasants. And then Europe ended up having kind of a knee-jerk reaction to that. And I guess it's not much of a thing over there anymore.
I think I heard that now that you mention it, that it's not as big a thing, if at all, over there.
Yeah.
Huh. So you're saying the British were like, well, since it's American now, we don't like it.
No, I don't remember what their reason was. like I said, I did a few minutes of Google Foo, and the article I found on it was Time Magazine. I'll include that link in the show notes, but that's my biggest issue with it, is being manipulated by the restaurant, typically restaurant owners, that the workers are getting most of their wage from you, not from them. And actually, the minimum wage for waiters and waitresses is actually quite low in the U.S. compared to the regular minimum wage.
Right.
And so that, I'd say that offends me, but I like to mock those who say that offends me. So I'll just say the principle of it annoys me because I feel manipulated. There, you have it.
Yeah, so I have no problem with tipping. Like, I used to believe tipping worked when I was younger, in that you do a good job, here's some extra cash. I don't see why anybody in any industry can't have that.
Yeah.
If you did a good job, my oil change, and I like the guy who did it, and I feel like he did it faster than the other guys or whatever, or I just like his smell. Hey, here's $50, here's $10, whatever. And I feel like that belongs to him. I gave it to him because he's the one who did a good job. I have heard the argument like, well, what about the cook? If your food was absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
Well, shouldn't he get some of that? Like, sure, I guess. I've always thought of tipping as the waitress or waiter, whatever, didn't make me wait for a refill on my drink.
Yeah.
Made sure I had enough ketchup or napkins or whatever. And, I don't want them to come over every 2 seconds and interrupt me constantly. But part of the reason that I feel like waitressing or waitering, whatever the word is somewhat different. Like, if you buy something from Walmart, the person at the cash register, they just ring you up as quick as you can and you're out. It's like there's not a huge variety between cashiers. But with the waiter or waitress, it's a little bit up to them how often they come check on you, how pleasant they are.
Yeah.
I mean, even a cashier can be pleasant or unpleasant, so whatever. Obviously, we grew up with tipping waiters and waitresses.
Yeah.
But when I discovered that the boss is allowed to pay them less than legal minimum wage, not that I really think minimum wage is the best thing in the world, but if we're going to have one,
yeah,
why is somebody allowed to get away with not following the rule?
Yep.
Just because they know that the customers, like, then it's not even a tip anymore. It's just regular pay.
Yeah.
That annoys me. Like,
yep.
I read an article a few years ago. I saw it in the newspaper. It said that there was some guy or company that owned several restaurants up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area who said, we're not doing tipping anymore. We're just paying our people a decent wage, hourly wage, and please don't tip.
Hmm.
We're not doing it. We're done with it.
Interesting.
And then it removes all the controversy around it. And I'm like, I like it. Let's all do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think pay your people what they're worth or more if you can afford it, whatever.
Yep.
And if they're not doing a good job, fire them or discipline them. I think customer service, some people are born with it. Some people aren't. You can get better at it.
Yeah.
But some people are just not made for customer service.
Right.
So I think if you're going to have someone in customer service, you need to find the people who are good at it and have a good sense of how to do it right.
Yeah.
And maybe give them some extra training to make them better. I mean, just like with any job, you need to find somebody who's good at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just anybody and everybody. So that's my thought, is pay them what they're worth. Don't expect your customers to supplement their pay so that you don't have to. That never made sense to me. Like,
so what the article, I'll have a link to it in the show notes. They refer specifically to that they assumed that would mean if they give better service, they get more tips. There's something about that whole stat that actually in reality doesn't even work out the way people think it does. You'll have to read the article again. I just quit Google it. So I had just curious to see
how
other people felt about it. But my main thing is just the knee-jerk thing about I feel manipulated by the employer.
Yes, yeah. So, and that's who I'm upset with is the employer.
Yeah.
Maybe the industry, because if you're going to be in the industry, you got to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, certain things you just have to do or you're not going to make it.
You know, if it drives prices up, well, we can decide if we want to come or not. But then we don't have to feel guilted into helping subsidize the employees beyond just paying for our meal.
Yeah. So the whole tipping thing annoys me. But then the question is, do I tip? Yes, I do. Because it's the employee who loses out if I don't. I think.
Oh, man. Feel manipulated.
I
feel sorry. Empathy. That's great. I feel empathy for him.
It's one of those things like if the system were better, that would be good.
Yeah.
But because we're all currently stuck with this system, I'm going to try to make the best of it.
Yep.
And do what I feel is right. I remember I went through a time of like tipping is dumb. I don't think I should have to tip. I know some people who say, I want to pay for my meal twice. Why should I have to?
Yeah.
I have it. I've convinced myself now that that's not, it's just part of the price.
Yeah.
If I can't afford a tip, then I shouldn't go out to eat. You know, that's how I think of it. I just think of it as I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to think about whether I like it anymore. I'm just going to do it. And one of my cousins is a waitress and she put a long spiel on Facebook. I'm like, it's a good point. And again, it's, why can't the boss just pay the person what they're worth? But since they don't, I guess you could say I'm the bad guy if I don't.
Keep doing it because, this is still working.
So here's the other issue with tipping is now it seems like more and more companies that didn't used to get tips are now asking, would you like to tip? I'm like, what?
What for?
What am I tipping you for?
Yeah.
And I was never sure what to do. I'm like, you know, it seems like almost every time you swipe your card now, it says, would you like a tip? Like if it's anything related to the food industry.
Yeah.
I heard one guy say that he ordered his coffee on a machine at a coffee shop, and then they just call your name and you go grab your coffee and leave. And the machine, you know, the computer said, would you like to tip? And he's like, who am I tipping? The computer?
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
The person who hands me my coffee has essentially no interaction with me.
My favorite is the automatically added on gratuity when the party's above a certain number. That's like...
Yeah, and again, when I first heard of companies doing that, I'm like, what? I thought it was my choice. So,
yeah, I get if you got a party of eight that goes and sucks up a huge table at a restaurant that needs a lot more service, whereas if there was two parties of four, you know, they might get more tips because it's two different parties. And
Yeah, makes sense.
But it's just the presumption of the thing, you know?
Right. Again, if it was just built into the price, then we'd all...
We'd pay it, not know any different, and we'd decide if it was too much, we wouldn't go there anymore. But otherwise, we'd just continue on, and they'd get their money, and they wouldn't have to feel guilty. See, I didn't come to get guilt. I came to get food. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And again, all other
industries, nobody else does that.
Right. No, you just buy the thing or you don't, and you pay full price or you don't buy it. Like, there's no question of, do I need to add some extra?
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying, if you're just ringing up stuff at the grocery store... That's a little different than someone coming to your table to make sure you don't need anything else or getting you refills or extra napkins, whatever.
I think I should get to participate in the employee Christmas party with all the self-checkout I've been doing.
Exactly. Okay, so when I finally settled it in my mind how I'm going to do this, and if I go to a place where I order at the front counter and they just hand me my food and I leave.
Yeah.
Or I go sit down, but they don't come and ask me if I need anything else or refill my cup. I got to go refill my own cup, whatever. I'm fine with that. But I'm like, well, I'm not going to tip you then. I'm just going to push the no tip button. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to feel guilty about it.
Yep.
I'm not even going to look them in the eyes. I'm just going to hit the no tip. And, I'm guessing, I don't know how the employee feels. I don't want to find out, really. And to me, that, I don't know, do like a McDonald's, for example, like, no one's ever asked for tip at McDonald's that I know of.
No.
But if they started, does that mean now all of a sudden they're all making less than minimum wage? Or is that how that's... I don't even know how that works anymore.
Oh, man.
You know what I'm saying? Or maybe here's something I just thought of. if you ask for tips, can you suddenly legally get by with paying less than minimum wage? Is that why this is all happening?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. In which case, now am I the bad guy again? Because I'm not tipping these places. Yeah, essentially my rule is if I didn't tip you your kind of establishment when I was 15 years old, then I'm not going to tip you now. Where does this end? Who else is going to start asking for tips?
Yeah, no kidding.
But now I will kind of want to go find out what is the legal rules on this?
Yeah.
How
do the restaurants legally get by with what they're currently doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Can they just put on a form like, we ask for tips, therefore we can pay $2 an hour? Like, I don't know.
It is something ridiculous like that, though. It's very low. Yeah. Moving on to something just slightly more important, practical.
Yeah.
You had commented about talking about ignoring bad or dumb advice without arguing.
Uh-huh.
Quick say, that's an interesting idea as far as don't feel like we have to. I've struggled with this where it's like somebody says something, quote, wrong or whatever. You feel like you have to respond to us like you don't.
Right.
You really don't.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of figured this out 20 years ago. As I said the other day to you off air, this is why my math is bad at how many years ago things were. It either happened last year or 20 years ago. That's how my life works. I don't know anything in between. I remember when I figured out, somebody's like, you know, if you do it this way, and I'm thinking like, well, that's dumb because you don't know all the background of, and you're just looking at it from the outside. So I'm like, no, this isn't going to work because this was, and then inevitably they say, well, yeah, but I don't know. I think my way is better. And then you get annoyed because they keep pushing. It's like, it finally hit me. You could just say, yeah, I definitely could do it that way. And that's...
Right.
Then we're done.
Right. Right.
The conversation doesn't need to go on.
Yeah.
And ever since this kind of realization hit me, like, I don't need to justify why I'm doing my thing my way to some random person who has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Even somebody in my own house or family or whatever, if it doesn't concern them, I don't need to take their advice and I don't need to explain to them why I'm not going to. I just say, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I could do it that way. And then go about my business.
And go back to doing it the way I was going to do it.
Right. Now, it's a little different if you're doing something in front of them while they watch and they want to keep getting involved. That's a little tougher situation where you try not to offend people, but
yeah.
But I've had like a lady that I used to work with. She was always telling me like all these ideas on the kinds of jobs that she think I would be good at, and I'm thinking like,
what do you know about me?
Like, she was trying to be helpful. She thought I'd make a good salesman. She think I could make a lot of money and help my family better and all this, and it would annoy me. It would just make me irritated, like,
right.
Stop. I've already tried sales. I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
And I would be tempted to say that to her.
Right.
But I would just bite my lip and be like, yeah, that's definitely an option. and then the conversation doesn't just go on and on and get more and more frustrating, you know. There has been once or twice where my wife is talking to somebody and they're kind of arguing, discussing, trying to make their point and get convince the other person, and the other person's trying to do the same. And the whole time I'm sitting and listening, I'm like, just stop. It's the same situation. Like, the other person, it doesn't matter what they think. This is your life, your thing. They're just...
My favorite's when it rinse, repeat, loops around about three, four times, yeah, exactly. And they both say the exact same thing in the same sequence, and then respond in the same exact same thing, but four times. That's awesome.
So one time, at least, I called her from the other room, and she's like, hold on just a minute. And she's like, what? I'm like, don't tell anyone that I said this, but you can just stop responding and this discussion / argument will be over quickly. She's like, yeah. But again, she can ignore my advice too.
Yeah,
she wants to continue this discussion. Go for it. And I've found now that when I want to give someone advice or a tip on how they could do something better, and it's their life, their thing, I have no authority or even if it's my own kids and it's like, I'm not going to force you to do it. You can do it however you want. I'm fine with it. But here's how I would do it.
Right.
If that's really how I'm going to do this,
right,
then I've found myself thinking, okay,
you have to do the same.
I have to do the same thing. Like, you know what? I would do it this way. Like, yeah, but I don't want to because of it. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I gave you my thoughts. You can do with them what you want.
That is all very true and very applicable. trick is listening sometimes if somebody happens to say something, because they don't see the world the same way we do,
mm-hmm.
they might actually see it from a different angle that maybe it does make more sense. So the trick is once in a while going, I need to ponder that for a second or two. He might actually be right.
Right, right. Yeah, like Jordan Peterson.
Right.
One of his pieces of advice is, if someone criticizes you, it doesn't matter if they hate you or they love you or they want to see you fail or they want to see you succeed. Think about their advice. Sometimes it's obvious that it's bad advice, but
yep.
You could listen to what they say and potentially improve yourself or your life or your situation by actually just taking what they say and pretending it came from someone who loves you.
Yeah.
And say, well, maybe that's true. I could do this better.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times people look for something they could criticize and then criticize that. Like, just because their motives are they love to criticize doesn't mean what they're saying is actually wrong.
Right.
Right. It's definitely hard to hear it from people who, when they're annoying you. And,
and when that's what all they typically do around you, exactly. It's really hard to take. But
Right.
But being teachable says it's possible. I don't know everything. I'm not God. So they might have a point.
Right.
Might have a point. Right. It does make us more enjoyable human beings to be around, though, when we, you know, if it's not an employer-employee situation and you're offering somebody your thought on something, just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they go, oh, thanks for the advice or whatever, but whatever, or yep, could do that and drive on, like you said, be a good human and just let it go. If you don't have any actual authority in their life, then just let it go, for crying out loud.
Right.
You're not God either, so it's possible that you're wrong.
Right, exactly, yeah. Sometimes when I'll approach somebody and I'll be like, okay, I can already see where this might go. I really want to give them this advice, but, and what is it, in Proverbs, something about...
Yeah, Proverbs 26, verse 4, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. So it's like it's sucked into the conversation on a foolish conversation.
Right.
Verse 5, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes, which this is classic with the way some people are. I won't say they were F-O-O-L-S. I will just say this seemed foolish how they thought they saw something. They had the answer to everything. And if you don't say anything, they just continue to assume that. But even if you correct them, which is kind of what it says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. So don't get sucked into stupid conversations.
Yeah, and I like that verse. It sounds like a complete contradiction. And do not answer a fool according to his folly. Answer a fool according to his folly. Like, what? Takes a little thinking through that one.
It's like, well, here's what happens if you answer, and here's what happens if you don't.
Right. And I heard someone explain that verse, and it's something like you said, don't get sucked into the conversation and start acting like a fool yourself and getting frustrated and, you know, and don't get sucked into the foolish way that they're being and act the same way back to them.
Yep.
So don't answer a fool according to his folly. But answer a fool according to his folly. Like, if they're saying something so stupid that you can just show them how foolish they are, then that might go, oh, I guess that is kind of dumb.
Right.
If it's really foolish, oftentimes it's obvious that it's wrong, and there might be some way to just say, look at how dumb you're being, just with a word or a question. So answer them according to their folly in that show them their own folly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when I come to somebody and I want to give them advice, I'll have this in mind already that sometimes people like to argue with you and tell you why they don't think that advice is good. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not saying just take my advice because I'm smarter. I'm saying, here's some advice. Throw it in the garbage if you don't like it. I don't actually need to know if you think it's good advice.
Right.
Do what you want with it. Take it with a grain of salt. I don't actually care. Just trying to be helpful if you think it's helpful.
And it's good to put ourselves in that frame when we offer to realize we're not God. There's no, especially if it's somebody we don't know all that well, it's like, why should they listen to me?
Right.
Of course, I think I'm awesome.
Yeah, right.
But
I know I'm smart.
No, my goodness.
So sometimes I will literally say, like, so I have this, I think I can help you, but if you don't think this is good advice, just ignore it. I don't care. I'm just trying to see if this might help you. And then I'll give my advice.
Yeah.
Like, and I'll actually say all that. And then some people are still like, I don't know. I don't think that's going to, like, all right. I tried to avoid this long, drawn out. Of course, then I can just let them finish telling me why they think I'm wrong and not respond. That's fine.
Right. You still choose to not respond.
Yep. Right, exactly. So, yeah, this is not actually something I've heard anyone else talk about that I remember. It's possibly I heard it and forgot and then thought I invented it. But here's how my mind, my thought process went on this. The question is, why does God exist? Tons of people have asked the question, who made God? Like, that's not what I'm talking about. My answer to that is nobody made God. He's eternal.
Right.
There's a long conversation on that, but I'm skipping right past that. It's a question that nags at me, not that it doesn't make me doubt God's existence or doubt the Bible is true or any of that. It just is a question that when I think about it too long, it bugs me and I don't know what to do with it. I don't have an answer, but it still comes into my mind is why does God exist? Why should there even be a God? What is it about the way things are or I don't even know if I could say universe or why is there even a God? Like it almost partly in my mind, it almost makes more sense that nothing should exist. why is there a God? Like, and what got me to that question was when you think about the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and I 100% believe the Bible from beginning to end. If you take everything on the topic of how many gods are there, the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, all this, I believe you have to come to the conclusion that there is one God, three persons, you know, the way that traditional Orthodox Christianity has always seen it. Okay, baptize in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, right?
So Matthew 28:19 says, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's just one of the many verses that you can put together and say, yes, the Trinity is correct, the doctrine of the Trinity.
Yep.
We could talk more about that, but again, that's not what I'm talking about. So to me, that breaks my brain. Because it's like, well, why would there be three persons?
Or three expressions, three facets.
Right, right.
In the Old Testament, it's Hear, O Israel, our God, he is one.
Right, yeah. And the way I've always heard it, one God, three persons. Okay,
right.
Really, if you say it any other way, you're getting close or getting into a heresy of some kind. So I'm fine with that. One God, three persons. I believe the Bible teaches that. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I feel like it would make far more sense if there was one God, one person.
Right.
I am one person. I'm one human. I'm one guy.
You're one place at a time.
One place, right.
In the same form every time.
Yeah. And I feel like all other conscious entities in the universe are that way except for God.
Right.
And you have all the questions of, well, how can Jesus pray to God?
Right.
You know, whatever.
Yep.
Some places it seems like some of the persons of the Trinity are doing the other one's job. So what possibly, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know. But I feel like I've seen that in places in the Bible where it seems like, well, the people said the Holy Spirit's a comforter. Well Jesus can comfort us too. And, you know, I'm like, okay, fine. There's a Trinity. I believe it. But it just rolls around in my head like it doesn't make sense to my human brain.
Right.
And I chalk it up to it's because I have a human brain.
Right. That's exactly where I was going to go with that, which is, I did a quick Googling on this, sent it to me, and it's like, okay, the biggest mistake anybody makes in trying to argue about these kinds of things is we're human.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we're pretty sharp on a good day, but the fact is, presuming there is a God, well, let's say it that way, don't you think he probably knows a whole lot more about everything that has ever existed than you do?
Right.
Or even 50 of us together or 1,000 of us together.
Yeah.
To me, that's the first error that's made is, well, doesn't this make sense to us? So obviously that can't be how it is. Really?
Right. Yeah.
Really?
And you could see that in other humans, like a 2-year-old doesn't make sense, so it can't be true. And every adult's like, what? You're 2.
Right.
Like,
but adults do it too.
That does not logically follow that if you don't understand something, that means it's not true.
Right.
I don't care what religion or philosophy or worldview you have. It's rather obvious that that's true. Of course, then we can't apply it to ourselves when we start thinking about things that we think are to the limits of understanding. Like, well, there must not be anything outside of that then, you know.
Right.
So I start thinking about, like, well, why are there three persons? Why can't there just be one? Why three? Why not 4? Why not 10? I don't know. Why is it 3? And I feel like it's a silly question. Like, it's unanswerable. I don't know. It almost, like, starts to make me think, like, well, did someone make God and there's the rules he set up? Like, well, no, I don't believe that.
Right.
There has to have been a first ultimate creator of everything. If someone created God, then his creator is ultimate and has no beginning, or the one who made that one. You can't keep going back infinitely.
Right. And that's where you get into the brain meltdown. No matter what you believe about the universe, you still end up with that issue, which is you can't explain where any of it came from.
Right, right.
Frankly, if we're being honest about it, it really does come down to, I choose to believe the version of the universe that the Bible tells me about, that that's where it came from and that's how it is. Because no matter how you slice it, something existed forever.
Right. Something existed first, and nothing came before it, and it didn't have a beginning.
And we can't understand that. And that's where we need to admit the limitations of our finite brain, which is you're not going to understand it.
Right, right.
No, that doesn't mean you're stupid. No, that doesn't mean you're not using science, because you can't scientifically observe enough stuff to in any way give yourself any kind of proof of any of that.
Right, yeah.
I would say that's the reason Christians argue that God is real, is given the fact that neither one of us can't show you anything to prove back on day 50 bazillion days ago, this is what the deal was. But we have evidences in our lives because of what God, not our own doing, how God has changed our lives, literally, not, I mean, real things, testimonies I've given in previous episodes about situations in my life that God literally just shows up, so to speak, and fixes things. I mean, shows me things about my life just out of nowhere. They're not answers I could have known. And it's not like, oh, yeah, so I just finally decided on that day I was going to explain to myself. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right.
So my argument for the existence of God in the observable is how my life is different because of him, because I follow him, because I believe what he says, because I pray, because you're going to spend your life on something. You're going to worship something with your life. Even if it's a collection of vinyl records or some really esoteric audio gear or some super expansive collection of everything sports related ever in the history of sports or whatever it is. But the reason that desire is there is because God wired us to want to worship something that is truly worthy, which is him.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets into, I'll say this. Everybody knows that knee-jerk reaction they have when they watch some action movie and some villain is acting like they're all that in a bag of chips. And everybody's like, you're a jerk. I mean, everybody, you know they're not all that.
Mm-hmm.
God is the one being in the universe that is all that.
Right, right.
It's not egotistical for him to tell you to worship him, that he seeks worshipers, because he is all that. Mm-hmm. There really is one being in the universe that is all that, and it's him.
Right. So the question of, like, why is there a Trinity? I don't know. That's unanswerable, I think.
Right.
Unless God can tell us, and I don't. Maybe he will, you know, when we're in heaven with him.
In
I don't
eternity,
know.
Yep.
Maybe not. I don't really know. But I'm fine with it. That leads me to, like, well, if I'm trying to make sense of why are there three persons and one God, why not four or one? Well, why is there even a God? That's like my process on, my thought process on how I get there. And I'm like, and I remember the first time I had that question coming up, I'm like, I don't know, I can't even explain how I felt. I'm like, that's so weird. Like, I get that if we exist, there must be a God. That's how I see it. That makes perfect sense to me. We can't exist the way we are, or the universe, without a creator. And yep. He's got to be all-knowing, and he's got to be all-eternal.
Right.
He's got to be all-wise.
All-powerful. Yep.
All-powerful, all of that. But why is there a God? I don't even know if I can go anywhere else with that conversation at that point, because I don't have anything else to say. There's no answer. It's a question that occasionally comes into my head, and I don't know what to do with it.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you get what I'm, like,
yeah,
saying?
I don't know.
Do you have the answer, Rick? Do you know? Am I just missing something?
Because God?
Yeah, I guess. That's why when he says, I am, like, he doesn't finish the sentence.
I am that I am.
I'm just I am. Like, what? Yes, correct.
Exactly.
Fill
present
in the blank.
Tense. I am.
Yeah, not that we're saying God is the trees and God is the grass. Like,
no.
Eastern religion, that's not what I'm saying. But everything was made by him, through him, for him, to him. And really, if you think about it, the only way to even attempt an answer to that is, okay, why do I exist? Well, I have to ask my creator that. He's the one who made me, and he thought about why he wanted to make me before he made me. So he has the answer to why do I exist. But I already accept the fact that nobody made God, so I guess there's no answer. Why does God exist? That's not even the question shouldn't even... That's not even a question. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the part where the finite brain just fizzles and...
Yeah,
exactly. It's got nothing. No matter how many years you take it back, how many bazillion years you take it back, it's still... Yep, he was still there then.
Right.
Yep, he was still there then too. Yep, yep. There, there. Still right. there. Always was there. Yep, even before that. Yep, still there. Yep.
Yeah, I remember when I was older than 20. I don't even know how long ago, but older than 20. Or younger than 20. More than 20 years
old. You weren't today years old. You were...
No, when I was, I don't know, I'm going to guess somewhere between 5 and 10 years old-ish, I remember thinking about the unlimitedness of the universe. And like in my mind, I was like traveling away from the earth and like just going and going and like there's no end. How is that even possible? Like, and I just remember just like being like totally enthralled with this thought of there are no edges to the universe. Like I remember thinking of it as a kid, like if you leave the earth and you just keep going, like you don't stop. It was so bizarre and weird to me. I feel the same way about this question of why should there even be a God or anything?
Hmm.
It just...
And no, we're not just imagining that we're here right now, because why would we want to do that if we weren't actually here? Why would we bother ourselves with that? Because you get that philosophical thing,
right,
too.
Right.
Well, why do we call it two? I don't care what you call it. Avocados and avocados make guacamole. To quote Mike Warnke.
I was thinking, like, that's got to be a quote from somebody.
It is.
So I used to work with this guy. He was an atheist, and he was a brainiac, and I think he was a very smart guy, really into...
He was very intellectual.
Intellectual, that's the word, yeah. But we got into, you know, I said something to the effect of, if we exist and the universe exists and all these things, then there must have been a creator. And he's like, oh, that doesn't follow. That's not necessarily logical. As we were talking, we were walking out to the parking lot, and I pointed to my car and I said, look at my car. Look at how intricate it is, and everything's fit just perfectly, and it makes the car go, and there's not a piece there by accident that shouldn't do anything. Like, every single piece is exactly in the right spot, and it does what it's supposed to do, and it all makes the car run. And it's extremely intricate. I don't know how it works. I'm not a mechanic. And every piece, the tires and the seat belt, it all fits perfectly for a human. All this stuff. I'm like, would you say that it's possible that nobody made that? He's like, no. I said, well, then what's the difference? He goes, well, the car has an obvious purpose. That's how I know that someone had to make it. Someone had to design it and create it. And I didn't have a response at the time. I'm like, whatever. And then later I realized, I'm like, I should have said, what is the purpose of my eye? And if he has an answer, then I say, okay, someone made my eye then. By your own logic, that proves that someone created my eyeball and designed it and
right.
built it just the way it is.
Yes, we have a purpose. We were created for a purpose, and that was to glorify him and magnify him and worship him because he is all that.
Right. And then a later conversation, days or weeks later, then he was saying, so we're talking about the purpose. Why are we here? What's the point? And I said, if there's no God, then there's no purpose. And he said, no, we have a purpose. I said, so well, what's our purpose? He goes, to procreate and reproduce.
I'm like, why?
What's the point of that?
Right.
If I build a machine whose sole purpose is to make more machines that make more machines, and that's all it does, no one's going to buy it. It doesn't do anything.
Right.
I mean, if I had a car that could get me from A to B, but it could also make more cars, now that would be a hot seller.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's because making more of itself is not the main purpose.
Right.
It does something.
Right.
So, and I couldn't believe he said that. I'm like,
you just said there was no purpose.
Yeah, earlier. Like, and I didn't even put it together at the time, but thinking about it later, I'm like, and the purpose that you say that we have is not a purpose. It doesn't even make sense.
Right.
And when I said, you know, if there's no God, then we have no purpose. He said, well, that's not logical. You're just asserting that. Okay, whatever. If I say what I wanted to, I'm sure he wouldn't have been convinced, so it doesn't matter. But
right. Clearly, I was hallucinating then.
Yeah. But if a kid sets a glass of milk on the table and he doesn't realize he's setting it on the edge, and then it falls and it spills everywhere and splashes all over the wall, and I were to say, what was the purpose of that? Why did you put milk all over the wall and all over the floor? And why did you put that drop there? He would say, the question doesn't make sense. I didn't do it on purpose. It was an accident and it was unintentional. So you can't ask me, why did I do that? Because I didn't intend to do it. There was no purpose for that. It was an accident.
Yeah.
So you doesn't even make sense to ask, why did that happen? It was a mistake. Even a child understands that. If you're going to ask why something, you have to ask the person who did it, and that person did it intentionally and with forethought.
Yeah.
And had a reason in his head. Then he's the one who can answer why. There was a YouTube video I was watching, and it was this old British Christian guy. I don't know why British people sound smart, but he sounded really smart. And a really old guy with the sounded like high society.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? The difference between the Cockney, but then the Queen's English. Like, if you hear them side by side, you can tell the difference.
Okay.
But the Cockney is like the street guy, the street sweeper, the poor person. But if you hear the aristocrats talk, they speak in a very different way, like this. Mm. But my Cockney like this, mate. You know. Anyway. When I was younger, I didn't understand there was a difference, but now I can totally hear a difference.
Okay.
So he had this high society sound to him. He said, "If I were to ask a scientist, why, when I put a kettle of water on a stove, why does the water boil?" He could give me an answer and it would be correct, you know, because of the molecules and the energy and all that stuff. And he could give me a long answer. And I could tell him, no, that's not why the water's boiling. The water's boiling because I want tea.
Right.
That's why the water is boiling.
Right.
It's like, well, which one's correct? They're both correct, but they're in completely different realms of...
Right.
Of quote-unquote reason why
one
something...
One implies an origin and a purpose and a personality, a being that initiated.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
The other one just explains the rules of physics. Now, the more interesting, I think, is like, God can answer, well, why did I create the world? Because I created people to glorify myself,
yep.
Which I know sounds arrogant, but we've talked about it. It's because he deserves it all.
Yep.
He could also answer, why does the water boil in the scientific way? And he's like, because I also made it that way. I made up the rules of physics.
Yep.
He could give you an answer that no scientist could ever think of.
Right. So along this line, so people talk about the universe. What slays me is they'll talk about it almost like it's a person. But it's not God. We're not talking about God.
Right.
We're not talking about the Bible. Okay. But you're talking about the universe as if it has an opinion, as if it has a personality. It doesn't.
You're talking like the universe is trying to tell you something, like that kind of thing?
Or my concern about that is that it gives a false sense of spirituality to it. Like it's a bigger meaning. It's like you're talking about something that is not a cohesive being, has no thoughts, has no opinion, has no rules, has no laws. But you talk about it as if it does.
Right.
And the reason that matters, if we're talking about the universe or we're talking about the living God who revealed himself in the Bible, is he does have rules. He does have grace. He does have mercy. He has a purpose. He is all powerful. And he does have an opinion about things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, we're made in God's image. We have a personality. We have likes, desires. We hate things. We love things. Because God has those things. That's why he made us that way.
Right.
Like my dad used to say, you talk like Max. And I would always say, who's Max? And he'd say, you know, Max? Like, who? Like, sense. You know Max Sense?
Oh, brother. Yes.
And then once I got it, he would just say, you talk like Max. And I would know, yeah, he thinks I don't make any sense. Or they do the same thing with evolution, like, evolution decided to make it this way so that the animal could survive. Like, but
yeah.
I'm exaggerating a little, but I've heard people just take the word evolution out and put God in.
Right, that is literally
sounds like a Christian talking.
How
now.
Some people use the
right.
Say it. It's like, okay, you just want something to be able to explain it to yourself because you know there's an explanation, but you don't want to ascribe that to God because that would be offensive. That would mean he might have something to say about how you live your life and about what he would like you to do with your life. And you don't want to do that.
Right, yeah. And one thing that I've always noticed when a atheist scientist studies a new animal and finds a body part that, oh, what's this do? Like, why do you assume it does something? Like, that's their first question is, why is it there? What's the purpose? Like, if evolution were true and there were no God, shouldn't we have millions and billions of body parts that do nothing?
Right.
That there are absolutely no reason for? They think they found a couple. They should be all over the place. You should be able to not look in any direction and not see one.
And the fact that you don't tells you that it was because it was designed. That's why there's not all kinds of spare parts.
Right.
And the human spare parts, quote unquote, that they think we have is because I'm sorry, you're not God. You don't know everything about our body. Yes, you may have studied it for decades. You're still not God.
Right, right.
So there might still be a purpose that eludes you.
Exactly.
Or it's possible that things have changed as far as environment or some other things where it's not able to perform the function it used to completely, so it seems purposeless.
Right, right.
I'm sorry, I'm not offering a specific example at this point, but I know there's things that they have thought have no purpose and realize, oh yeah, that actually does do something.
Yeah, like years or decades later, they finally figure out, oh, okay.
Just saying, to stop and pause for a minute and realize you're not God. You don't actually know everything in the universe. So it's possible there is an explanation that eludes you.
Right. And again, let's just say for the sake of argument, there is no God. There's no being with ultimate, unlimited knowledge. Fine. Let's just go there. Even you, who believes that, has to admit that some people don't know everything, but they think they do. And yep. You can look at them and go, what a fool.
Right.
Well,
right.
Surely you know that you don't know everything. So right. Why do you think these things? Like, well, can you just apply that to yourself?
Right.
At least the possibility that it might be true that
right.
There might be something you hadn't thought of.
Yeah. Again, just to consider the possibility that you might have missed something. There might be something you're not seeing. Just being teachable.
Exactly.
Being humble enough to go, like Dave Limmer says, what you know keeps you from what you need to know.
Right.
And so I'll explain how that's played out in my life. One specific way is dealing with professional audio. It's like assuming that you, even if you designed the system, did the installation, did all this stuff, assuming if something's not working properly, not finding the cause of it, it's still possible that even though, yes, you put all these pieces together, did all these things, and therefore everything should be X, Y, Z, it should be like this, this shouldn't happen, that can keep you from stepping back and go, okay, let's go back to the beginning and go back through this whole thing again, making no assumptions, because obviously something's afoot here. But because many times, even just in conversation, we'll just assume, well, no, I know that, that can't be right. So we don't even consider a possibility that we probably really should consider that might be the reason or might lead us to the reason.
Like, you got all these switches and dials are perfect and all the plugs are plugged in and all the connections are made and everything's perfect. And you forgot to see if it was plugged into the outlet behind the machine on the wall.
Right.
That's the one step you didn't
check. That's an assume, because it should be.
Right.
It's like, but you have to force yourself to step back, right. Which is very difficult to do, I'll admit. But it's worth asking yourself the question.
I have an example of this in my life. First job I had out of college, I did some fairly simple computer programming. Like, it was a software that had its own programming language and the software was for a very specific purpose. So the programming language was built around that. That's why I say it's a very simple version of like a programming language, but you had to learn it and learn the syntax and whatever. And so one of the things if you wanted the user to click a button and then this happens and this happens and this happens. And so you would type the word on button click. And then on the next line, you would say, what do you want it to do? Move this graphic or make this graphic disappear or appear, whatever. But I had this long list of like, and so check for this to see if they've done that first. And then if this is in the right position, then do this and make this. So it was this long, I don't know, like 30 lines of code or whatever. And at the very end, then you say end button click. So, you know, okay, this all happens. And so I did all this code and I was like, I'd kind of, you know, looked over it all. I saved it and then pulled up like the user version and I clicked the button and nothing happened. What the heck? Not even an error? Like, usually it'll give you some kind of error. Like, oh, this, you know, line of code is not right, or you know, yeah, something's wrong. It'll give you some clue,
yep,
as to what you might have done wrong. I'm like, that didn't even make sense to me. I'm like, nothing happened and it didn't give me an error, just nothing. I'm like, oh my, what in the world? So I opened up the code and I went through every single line. I read every character. I'm like, and then I double checked. And I'm like, I can't see what on earth would be wrong with this. So I saved it, did it again, click, nothing. I'm like, what am I missing? So I grabbed another employee and I said, can you look at this for me?
Right.
Am I missing something?
Right.
So he looks at it for 2 seconds. He goes, have you tried licking the button? I was like, what? I said, have you tried licking the button? I'm like, what? And he points to it.
You got it right there, yeah.
It said, on button lick,
yep,
do this. Like, oh my. And then I cracked up laughing because it was so hilarious. Have you tried, instead of telling me I spelled click wrong,
right,
he says, have you tried licking the button?
It functioned exactly how you told it to.
Exactly.
I hate it when it does that. That happens to me all the time too.
Right.
Those are my favorite kinds of solutions. So I can't get this thing to whatever. And you walk in and 2 seconds later it's fixed. It's like, I'm killing it today.
And of course, I was skipping that first line. That's not where it was. Oh, kind of like,
ramp.
I didn't plug it in, but I checked all the other 100
yep
connections and wheels and buttons.
Yep.
Like, I didn't start with the first step that was most obvious because I thought it didn't even cross my mind that I'd be that stupid to
yep
misspell
right
the first.
It happens, though. It happens.
Right. So when I say I checked every line except for the very first line,
right?
Because I'd never made that mistake before, apparently.
Yep.
Try licking the button. I did have another thought talking about, come on, you evolutionists, apply this concept to yourself. Maybe you're wrong. It's like, well, they could say the same thing to us. How are we going to answer that? Like, well, what if you're wrong? Like,
yeah, that's no fun.
Point being, at least try to keep that in mind. You could be wrong, too.
Yeah, that's always a possibility. It's not that you need to live in paranoid self-doubt, but that should always be on your list of things to check. You've seen that troubleshooting chart, like, is it broke? Yes. Did you do it? Yes. Then you go, hide it. But the troubleshooting chart of, yes. You always got to go back to the very top and start from the top.
Right, right. So, is it possible that we might be wrong that there's a God, Rick? Is that what we're saying?
Theoretically, it's possible.
Right.
Because I guess that's the thing that's the most abrasive about the whole subject is just because there's a few things that can be explained in specific science or they can observe certain things, it still comes down to what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody was, the closest thing we have to, and I will posit this, that the thing we do have as far as somebody was there, was the Old Testament, is not a fairy tale. We do have something that goes back several thousand years worth, but nobody was back there a million years ago.
Right.
And there's only so much you can extrapolate and assume is constant since then to observe and say, well, then this is how it is. It's still an issue of faith.
Right, right.
Let's just be honest about it.
And it's kind of like, you know, when I'm playing a board game, I got like 3 or 30 different things I could do and I can't figure out which one's the best. I'm like, and I'm racking my brain and Jim's there saying like, it means the game, Tim. It means the game. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. At some point, I just have to go, well, I'm going to place my chips on this because this is just a game. It's not the universe. I can actually measure I have a 1 in 6 chance of this happening and a 2 in 6 chance of that happening, whatever. I'm going to go with the one that's the numbers are best in my odds and then see what happens.
Yep.
There's I forget what they call it. They name it after the guy who came up with the thing. It's like something wager, where it's like, if there is no God, I can believe there's a God or not. If there's no God and I believe there is a God,
oh yeah,
I don't lose anything.
Right.
If there's no God and I believe there's no God, I don't lose anything.
Right.
If there is a God and I believe there's a God, then I have everything to gain.
Yep.
If there is a God and I don't believe in him, then I have everything to lose.
Right.
So out of all those 4 possibilities, believing there's a God is your best chances, if you want to talk about it that way.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, yeah, that's really good. But the other part of me is like, can you just say, all right, since I got the most to gain from believing there's a God, I'll just decide that I believe there's a God. Like, is that really belief?
Right.
I don't even know if that makes sense. I don't know if that might convince somebody to believe in God.
Right.
I kind of feel like it wouldn't.
To me, part of it, the point of some of that thing is to point out because typically people that aren't believers and believe the believers that's ridiculous. They have something else that they trust in that they believe explains things satisfactorily to them that answers the question that we all have because we're created by God to have the question, which is, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it is that they rely on to answer that question for them intellectually, that it's a statistical question to ask yourself, does it make sense to wager on what you believe? But to first of all acknowledge that it is faith. It's still faith. Because you can't go dredge up any physical evidences that remove all doubt and prove and back themselves up that they can't be disproved that this is the nature of the universe. They don't exist.
Mm-hmm. It's something I heard, I forget who, but I heard some discussion on like evidence does not equal proof.
Yeah.
And the question is like, what is proof anyway? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you could do proof in math, like 1 + 1 = 2. Well, let's try it. If I put one apple in a basket and add another one, well, I have 2. Okay, I just proved that 1 + 1 = 2. But that's not what we're talking about.
Right, right, exactly.
You know, and it's Pascal's wager was the thing.
Okay.
The 4 possibilities.
Because there are a number of the early scientists like Pascal and Newton who were believers, and they were able to discover the laws that God created in the universe because they believed he was there. So the proverb says this, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, I don't care what degrees you got, how many years of schooling you got, if you don't believe there's a God, the Bible already says that you don't have the very first thing that's required to have true wisdom, and that is to fear God because you don't believe that he is. So it causes people to overlook things because right off the bat, they're assuming he doesn't exist. You're already starting from an erroneous vantage point. You're not going to find the truth, and you're not going to find all the answers if you assume from your starting point that there is no God. You're not going to find him.
Mm-hmm. And like David's son who wrote Solomon. Which book is he like, everything's meaningless?
Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, like in Ecclesiastes, you know, I've tried learning, I tried pleasure. I was like, it's all meaningless. Like, yeah. Now, of course, the assumption is like not, you know, if there was no God. And the book doesn't bring God into any of these things. He's talking like if this is all there is, just learning or just pleasure or whatever,
right.
It's all meaningless. He's like, I tried it all. He was, you know, the wisest king and the richest. Sure, he had all the time on his hands that any human could want to try whatever they want, and he could afford whatever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of learning, if the ultimate purpose is to glorify God, but we spend a lifetime learning and growing in knowledge about all kinds of things, but none of it glorifies God, then it's pointless.
Yes, and he concludes his book with one of my favorite verses. He says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter." This is Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. So after you went on 12 chapters of ranting about all the stuff that's meaningless and is a chasing after the wind and all these other things, he says, conclusion of the whole matter, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil.